VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
We do thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today. Another important program, another important topic. Very mixed emotion and even mixed information has been given to the American people about the coronavirus from all levels. Even in the very beginning, we had Dr. Fauci not concerned by this virus compared it to the flu. And then all of a sudden, we see some draconian measures put on across the nation. When this took on a very serious tone, we were told of models with some very astonishing numbers pertaining to projected infections, very high numbers of deaths. Many states around the country issued shelter-in-place orders, and while some states are starting to loosen up, others are getting even more stringent. The question is, what's going on? According to our guest today, we have been lied to. We'd like to invite you to join us as we welcome John Guandolo, president and founder of Understanding the Threat. He advises governments on matters related to national security, specifically the threat from the global Islamic movement. He's a former FBI agent, a counterterrorism expert, co-author of the book Sharia, The Threat to America, and author of Raising a Jihadi Generation and Islam's Deception, The Truth About Sharia. John, thanks for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
Thank you so much for having me again. I really do appreciate it.
Well, you made a pretty strong allegation that we've been lied to. What brings you to this conclusion?
Well, when we look at the timeline of what has happened since we first became aware of the outbreak until today, what we see is, what I see as an investigator and what I believe the facts demonstrate, is that you have persistent lying and persistent propaganda going on surrounding the COVID issue. We have shut down the entire United States for 2 months, which we believe at Understand the Threat, and certainly there are indicators to support this, that we may have completely destroyed our economy. It just happens to be the greatest economy in the history of the world. And what we see as the lead-up to the coronavirus are, you know, a dozen different indicators that if you put what happened in the lead-up to the outbreak of COVID, the Chinese coronavirus, to what we've seen until today, I'm not a believer in coincidence. I'm certainly not a believer that 4 or 5 dozen actions that all point in one direction just happen to be coincidentally mysteriously arranged.
So when you talk about this lead up to it, define what you mean.
So prior to COVID, last summer, 2019, and fall, President Trump put harsh tariffs and trade restrictions on China.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge, and the Chinese were not happy about it. And they have made clearer and clearer that they're not happy about it. You also have China, over a number of years, openly saying they're going to defeat the United States, that they're waging economic warfare against the United States. Their military leadership has pointed to doctrine that they're using, specifically unrestricted warfare, which means everything's legal, everything's on the table, everything's game. And we know that they have 2 biological weapons labs in Wuhan, China. Other events that lead up to this is, in December, you have the chair of Harvard's Chemical and Biological Department there, along with 2 Chinese nationals, in December 2019, arrested. And this professor who's arrested, Charles Lieber, is paid exorbitant sums by the communist Chinese government to work directly with the labs in Wuhan. One of the 2 Chinese nationals arrested is a member of the Chinese army who's a Communist Party member. The other was caught trying to get out of Boston Logan Airport with 21 vials of biological material to take back to China. Now, this is all happening in December. You've got a number of things that we see. October, at Johns Hopkins University, they host a pandemic exercise called Event 201. The exercise is held, sponsored by Johns Hopkins for their part, at the Bloomberg School of Public Health, named after Michael Bloomberg, some people might recognize, Democrat presidential candidate before he dropped out, who gave $3 billion to Johns Hopkins. Now the center named after him is hosting this pandemic exercise that's also sponsored by the Gates Foundation. And the people, Bill Gates, who is up to his eyeballs in this whole COVID thing with regard to he's trying to offer money-making solutions, which in our opinion are questionable. And when I say questionable, meaning they seem to be focused on restricting liberty and the kinds of things I would see in a security state, not in the United States of America. But let me put that on the shelf for a minute. This event held in October, held at Johns Hopkins at the Bloomberg Public Safety School of Public Health and Safety, and sponsored by the Bill Gates Foundation. The people on the panel who are participating in this exercise to recommend policies on how the United States should respond. And as you know, Johns Hopkins has had a big impact on what we've done since COVID outbreak. Well, let me just tell you, three of the key people on this panel was, number one, the president of the UN Foundation, who advises the UN Secretary General on all kinds of matters. Number two, a Chinese doctor who is the equivalent of the director of the Chinese CDC.
Hmm.
So a member of the of Communist China sitting on this panel, and the woman who was the Deputy National Security Advisor to President Obama, who is a hard-left Marxist. She was also the number two at the CIA. These are the people making recommendations that just happens to be taking place 3 months before the COVID outbreak.
Wow.
Now, this could all be coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
I just have a hard time buying it. And now what do we get since the outbreak? Since the outbreak, we get that this thing is going to kill millions of people. I mean, we had a couple of the Marxist left-wingers publicly say 50 to 100 million people would have COVID and millions would die. But of the virus models, we had some of the models that were saying over 2 million people would die from COVID. Now, every week, like twice a week, the virus models are being fixed, because they were even as early as recent as 10 to 12 days ago. Some of these models were predicting, 300,000 dead in America.
John, how could these models and these projections be so wrong as it relates to mortality rates? Do we know anything about who's developing these models?
Well, it's interesting. So some of the key models come out of places like Columbia University. You may be aware that's not exactly a bastion of conservative patriotic thought in the United States. I would argue, and we've actually talked about this before, that Colombia is very tied to Iran. And without going too deep into that, Colombia is not a pro-American university. You've got the University of Washington studies that have been used, but you've also got COVID-19, which has been... We actually linked in one of our articles the data that where COVID-19 has been used around the United States by local government, by governors, and by the federal government to make decisions about COVID. COVID-19 was founded by a Democrat Marxist hack congressman and three Democrat fundraisers. And I call them hacks, really. I should just call them Marxists. They are left-wing ideologues. And so these are people developing the models. Now, I want to say, for the record, I get that sometimes models based on initial information, the input, can then predict things that are not accurate. Of course, it's a model. When you get in more data, then you realize, oh, this thing wasn't as virulent as we thought. But here we are 2 months later, and these models have consistently been 10 times and more inaccurate. And so the question is, are the people putting these models together that incompetent, that unprofessional, or is there intentionality here? These are questions that, as a former FBI agent, I ask. Is this intentional, or is it just, hey, this is normal? If you look at the last 30 years of these models, some are right, some are wrong. But what we've had in this case is they've all been wildly, excessively wrong.
Yeah.
And then when you marry that up with the fact that the U.S. traditional media has been literally defending communist China and attacking the President of the United States, you start putting all these markers in the ground, and you see that there it raises more questions than it answers.
Indeed, and as we even look at the fatalities being reported, I'm looking at Worldometers right now with the coronavirus, and they're reporting, as of right now, 62,670 deaths in the United States. And at the same time, John, we are led to doubt these numbers because of situations such as when New York just added a few thousand individuals, people who had never been tested for COVID-19, but presumed to have had it, added to these death tolls.
That's right. So you've got a bunch of things going on here. You've got, now the joke is, if you're watching social media, it's not a real incident, but, fire at nursing home, kills 100. One of them had COVID, so it's 100 COVID deaths, It's so absurd that the American people, I believe, are smart. Something is not right. And all we're doing at Understand the Threat, just like we do with the jihadi threat, is we put together the data, the facts. We look at it from a national security perspective, and we offer some questions and offer some perspective on that based on the situation. And I would say China has been very clear about where they stand with the United States. They've been very clear about their position towards the United States, and since the president levied tariffs and trade restrictions on them, they've been livid. And then all of a sudden, you've got an outbreak. And, of course, the Chinese, we now know, lied for weeks and are still lying to the world publicly about what's going on. You have the World Health Organization at the center of this, whose leader is a terrorist supporter. I mean, this is a guy that was, we have photographic evidence of him speaking with members of a designated terrorist organization. He is a communist. Of course, where did his loyalties lie?
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break here. John Guandola is with us today, president and founder of Understanding the Threat, and their website is understandingthethreat.com. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, author and seminar speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, today's a heavy topic. Is there a scientific explanation for suicide bombers?
Chris, our world today is on edge because of a suicidal terrorist. Since evolution claims to be a theory of everything, there must be an evolutionary explanation for even this self-destructive behavior. And sure enough, some evolutionists are now saying that suicidal tendencies are a variation of an evolutionary adaptation that was previously useful in some evolutionary sense. Creationists just stand back and wonder how they can be so misguided, so deceived. The Bible says that man was created initially in a very good state, in the image of God. Yet when Adam rebelled against God's order, creation was permanently distorted, and now we live in a world dominated by sin's ruinous effects. Chris, so you see, what began back in Genesis continues today, even with suicidal bombers.
Thanks, Dr. Morris.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. John Guandola is our guest today. His website, understandingthethreat.com. We're talking about COVID-19 and asking the question, are we being lied to? Some very troubling information that John is sharing with us here today. And John, one of the things that many are just scratching their heads about is the number of medical doctors that have been coming forth. A couple of emergency room doctors recently held this big press conference. It was just starting to go viral on YouTube, and then all of a sudden we have the likes of YouTube pulling them off or Facebook pulling them off. They don't want people to see this, but increasingly there's more medical doctors that are rising up saying, hey, we're handling this wrongly. We need to change our course as a nation. The shelter in place is not the direction we should be going, and their message is being stifled. Tell us what's going on there.
Well, what's interesting, I find fascinating. First of all, on the First Amendment part of this, the right to free expression, YouTube is a company, and they can decide to pull a video down for whatever reason they want. I get that. And we just had two of our videos pulled down, but they were both, one was an edited version, and the other was the full version of Dr. Erickson's comments about COVID, because we just did an article on it, and we linked, I spent time editing the 52-minute video down to 16 minutes. We're going to put those back up on our site and just embed them in our site. We're looking at getting that done in the next couple hours. But the reason I say that is, I understand, a private company can do things like that. But the question is, should they, and why are they doing it? And when the CEO of YouTube said, she said that we're going to, you know, we don't want this fake information about COVID going out, mm-hmm. and we're going to follow the WHO and whatever they say.
Mm.
So you have a private company saying we're going to be beholden to the WHO, who's, as I mentioned before the break, whose leadership, by the way, for the first time, Tedros is not a medical doctor, by the way, and Dr. Erickson and his partner, Dr. Sahi there, I believe that's his name, were our medical doctors. They're board-certified medical doctors. So that's the first thing, I guess I would say. The other thing I would say is, you know, I was an advanced capability medic in the FBI for 10 years. And I had, I would say, fairly extensive training in a lot of different areas of medicine, because we had used to have to work independently overseas and in the United States. And so we had training in infectious disease and hygiene and actually doing physicals and prescribing meds with the approval of a physician. But we had a lot of independent opportunities. And I say this because when I listened to what Dr. Erickson said on that video, an EMT could be saying that. You know, anybody could be saying it, because all he was doing, he gets more credibility because he has 20-plus years in the medical field and has been, you know, had training in microbiology and immunology. And even though he's not an immunologist or a microbiologist by degree, he has that experience. But you could have done that brief.
Mm.
Somebody who's not a doctor. Why do I say that? Because all he was doing is he had compiled the CDC data as of the moment he's sitting there, and was saying, let's look at the numbers, and whether COVID is less lethal than the flu, and certainly less lethal than other things that have come down the pike, the bird flu or SARS or whatever, you can compare them to those things. But even if you say, hey, in 2017, you said the number, as of today, we have 62,000 Americans that have died from COVID. That's sad, but people die every day of a bunch of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2017, the number, the window of people that died from that flu, because the numbers are not precise, the top end number was around 61,000 people. Now, we're going to, the numbers of people that get COVID and that die from COVID will keep going up, but even the models that we're using are predicting by the end of this month, by the end of May, that'll be tapering off. So the question is, based on these numbers, is it in our history as a nation, we've never quarantined healthy people. We quarantined sick people.
Right, right.
And so we're quarantined. We've locked down the entire society for 2 months based on numbers. And even if the number went to 200,000, for 200,000, and by the way, the models are taking into account social distancing. So it's not like if we weren't, if we're not social distancing, some actually take into account social distancing. Some do not.
And this is where governors have said, the numbers are smaller because we took these measures, because we practiced social distancing. You're saying that was actually part of the formula to begin with.
Right, that was part of the formula to begin with. So the numbers were highly exaggerated or way off. You know, I'll even give them credit and say they didn't intentionally do it, but everything points to these numbers are intentionally deceptive. From our perspective, based on a totality of what we know. But even if we look at, like Dr. Erickson did, you look at Norway and Sweden, and statistically, you might have a higher incidence of mortality if we go back to work. But there are so many other issues that aren't being talked about that he mentions, and that we had actually talked about. And by the way, we're aware that long before Dr. Erickson gave his brief, the White House was alerted by a colleague of mine who put some statistics together about, as best as we knew, what was going on with the other kinds of things. Suicide rates spiking, abuse in the home, physical abuse, spousal abuse, sexual abuse in the home, going up. What are some other things? We know that heart attacks going up. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but on just on days like daylight savings, when we move the clock forward and back, on average every year, or in the areas that do it twice a year, because some areas of the country don't, like Arizona, the incidence of heart attacks actually go up 25% just for a change of time. Now, you can say, what's that all about? We can break that down, but the point is the incidence of heart attacks during this time of increased stress going up. And so the question is, what's the overall cost? Not to mention we're destroying the greatest economy, which I think is the point of all of this, from China's perspective. So there are a lot of things in the pot that you have to look at this, I believe, from a much more macro perspective. Yeah. And make decisions based on that.
And when you put all this together, I mean, we still see, I mean, these overrated projections that were done here, John, and yet we've had all levels of government who have shut down this nation, I mean, federal, state, and local governments, and even as these models have been adjusted, there is such a hesitance on the part of many to open up the cities, the states, the nation. And the models are going against that very scenario here. As why would we see this hesitance when we see things are not near as severe? Sometimes what a tenth as severe as what they were projected, or thereabouts. Why the hesitance to even start opening up and really look at this thing as it should be, compared to how we've handled other issues in previous viruses that never triggered a shutdown like we see today?
I think the answer to that is fear. Fear. There has been a fear induced in our community. I mean, I've heard people I know. Mm-hmm. They're like, we can't open. You know, people are going to die. People die every day.
Yeah.
And here's one more thing to put on the plate for your listeners. I'm healthy. I'm going to assume you're healthy. Dr. Erickson mentioned this, but we had actually talked about this a couple months ago with this individual I just mentioned who had put together this paper for the White House. When you remove yourself from interaction with other people, if you're healthy and you have a healthy immune system, you actually reduce your immune system's ability. So you're lowering your immune system by wearing a mask, Cloroxing all your, countertops, washing your hands every 4 seconds, because our immune system actually remains strong by interacting in the world, taking in viruses, taking in germs. It learns that when you put yourself in a bubble for 2 months, you're lowering your immune system. So when they do say, go out, take your mask off, go be in public, you're going to see an increase in sickness,
mm-hmm.
probably a marked increase, because most of us who have not been, I mean, I've been trying to get out, and I'm not trying to hide, but there's only so much interaction you can do. I mean, based on the way the community is right now.
And
that is a big, big issue that we're going to deal with. And so, yeah, obviously, if you have a compromised immune system, if you're in a, you know, if you got a sickness or an underlying condition, well, then you normally would be cautious anyway. That those are people who do wear masks out in public, and they, you know, sometimes wear gloves when they do certain things, and certainly wash. Of course, you should do that. But that is a what I consider to be a big deal when you when we reopen, if you want to call it that, the society.
You know, what's interesting, and I'm looking at worldometers, and so far over 231,000 worldwide have died of coronavirus. But, John, that is just half of the number of people that have died by road traffic accident fatalities worldwide as well. It is also less than half of the people who've died by HIV/AIDS this year alone. But are we banning automobile sales? Are we putting a stop to the leading causes of HIV/AIDS across the nation? We're not taking any of these kind of actions like we are with the coronavirus.
No, and that you just nailed it. Thank you for making that point. I think that is a fantastic point. And the point to be made here is there's no consistency. There's no reasoned approach to this, but I wouldn't expect it because, mm-hmm. in our assessment, these are Marxists and others and their colleagues who are pushing this narrative.
John, address the media aspect of this and how they're handling this. Matter of fact, you've called the traditional U.S. media an active arm of a hostile communist effort to overthrow the United States. What causes you to reach that conclusion? Talk about the media.
Okay, so can you read that statement again for your listeners, what you just read?
Sure.
Comment?
Yeah, the traditional U.S. media, an active arm of a hostile communist effort to overthrow the United States government.
Okay, because I know there are listeners in your audience who are kind of squinting and saying, okay, that's a little much. I know the media, they're a bunch of jerks or something like that. And I want to clarify, because I stand by that statement. And I want to say I stand by that statement because I have studied the communist movement in the United States for a long time, and we have begun writing about it more and more because we see how it's becoming more and more overt. But when you look at, and very briefly, let me take 15 seconds and just say,
let me just interrupt you one moment here because the break music is starting, and I want us to be able to have you complete your thought on this. We're going to pick up with the media aspect to this right after the break. John Guandola is with us today. COVID-19, are we being lied to? John's website is understandingthethreat.com. Back in 1 minute.
Have you ever had someone attempt to talk to you about the Watchtower Society or the Book of Mormon? Or perhaps a friend has told you they've started yoga and invite you to participate. You know you heard something about these religions and teachings, but never had the material in your hand to give a biblical response to their teachings. Well, now you can. Two world-renowned researchers, Dr. Ron Carlson and Ed Decker, have teamed up to write Fast Facts on False Teachings, an easy-to-use resource guide that gives you quick, clear facts about several cults and false teachings. You'll find chapters on atheism, Freemasonry, Hinduism and yoga, Islam, Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormonism, and much more. Fast Facts on False Teachings is available for a donation of $16 or more by writing VCY America at 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin 53208. To make your donation by phone, call 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. With us today is John Guandolo from UnderstandingTheThreat.com. He is president and founder of the organization and talking about COVID-19, asking the question, are we being lied to? Our guest says we are, and laying that out for us here today. Just before going into that break, John, we were talking about the media and the media's role in all of this, the fear, the intimidation that is coming even through the media as they're extending that in so many different ways, and even talking about joining forces with a hostile communistic effort here to overthrow our government. So you're just getting ready to make some points here, so we'll let you take it from there.
Well, I just wanted to give, thank you, I just wanted to give your listeners a quick background of how we, collectively, the American public, can know, if you do the research, about the detailed plans that the communists have for the United States and what they've already done over the last 90 to 100 years. And let me just say very quickly that this is how we know. Well, first of all, we have the Communist Manifesto written back in 1848 by Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, that lays out who they are and what they seek to achieve. But we also have what the Soviet Union was doing. We have intercepts. We have the Matroikin files. Vasily Matroikin was an archivist for the KGB for over 30 years and defected to Britain and brought notes from all of the KGB operations for over 30 years. We have KGB defectors to the United States and to Canada and to Britain. We have people who have left Communist Party USA, predominantly among them are people like Bella Dodd, who testified before the House Un-American Activities Committee. We have the years of investigations by the House Un-American Activities Committee about the communists here in the United States. We have declassified FBI files. We have intercepts from a number of ways that the United States was collecting information. And we have today, you can go on the websites of these communist organizations like RevCom, Revolutionary Communist Party in America, the Freedom Road Socialist Organization, Communist Party USA, where they tell you on their website that we exist to impose Marxism and Leninism, to have a revolution in the United States and to put, make communism the central focus of what we're doing. We have the plans, the 45 goals of the communists here in the United States. We have videotape of guys like Yuri Bezmenov, who's a KGB defector whose expertise was in propaganda and subversion, who tells us this is how we, the Soviet Union, were subverting America. And these are the stages, and this is how we do it. So if you study this, it's actually pretty elementary because all the material's there. It's just you take the time to verify it and look at it, and you can see that actually what they say they're doing, they're doing. I say all that as a preface to your question before the break. Why do I say that the media in the United States, and quite frankly beyond, but we'll talk about the United States, is not only hostile, they're an arm of the communist movement, is because they are. It's because we know that they've been penetrated. We know that after years, we see that the work of the both foreign and domestic communists have actually overtaken, and you can see it by what they do. They have been caught lying over and over and over again in conflict with issues of liberty. So they are in conflict with people who are promoting liberty. And when you see that over and over for a period of decades, you can actually make a reasoned assessment that this is not accidental. They're not accidentally wrong 90% of the time. They're actually intentionally doing it. So, for instance, with regards to COVID, we have CBS reporting, oh, here we are in a hospital and it's a total disaster and all that. And we find out, oh, that's film footage from Italy.
Right.
And then they apologize. And then they say, oh, my goodness, you know, the Brooklyn Hospital, it's a war zone, it's overrun, it's crazy. And Todd Stern says, oh, it is, and he walks out of his house and films with his phone the Brooklyn Hospital. And you think it's a Sunday morning at 8 a.m., quiet, not a soul there. lying. They're caught lying. And it's just, I'm just giving you two examples that are so easy. And that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. And so the question is, why are they lying? Why are they lying? Because there is a narrative that they are pushing. And the narrative is that COVID's a disaster, there's a crisis, and we need to just shut everything down. And what's that got to do with communism? Because the third phase of the four-phase plan of the communists, as detailed by Yuri Bezmenov on video, which we have a link to on our website in the article where we discuss it, the Communist Takeover of America is the name of the article, just written in the last week, that you see that they, once they get to the point they believe they're ready, they create a crisis so that they can crush liberty and begin to impose true communism, the true totalitarian state. And they've done it. The thing is, this isn't theoretical. We've seen them do it around the world in the last 60 years. And they've actually done this. It's worked. And they believe it's working in America. And so the reason this is, I believe, so difficult for Americans to digest, to grapple with, is because we're very good at the gunfight. You know what I mean? Bad guy, you know, does something, we go get him. Like, we're very good at it. The bank robbery scenario, we're really good at that. Police, FBI, the military. Somebody does something, we respond. Well, this is that slow burn over 100 years, and they've been saying it, we're bringing you down. Lenin said, we're going to sell the Americans the rope that they're going to hang themselves with.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to remind you, John is a former FBI agent and a counterterrorism expert. John, you've been with us several times previous talking about the global Islamic movement. I can't help but ask you the million-dollar question. Is there any connection between the communist movement joining forces with the global Islamic movement?
Yes. The bad news is they are working together. And they are working together at the local, state, national, and international level. So the Comintern, the International Communist Party, working with the nation states and the jihadi, the Islamic nation states, you know, like Iran and Saudi Arabia and others, working with China, Turkey also involved because they're allied with Iran. So yes, and we see at the local level, and at the state and national level, Marxist communist groups like Code Pink, ANSWER, Black Lives Matter, Freedom Road Socialist Organization, and others working with jihadi organizations like Hamas, both overseas and here in the United States, doing business as the Council on American Islamic Relations, Muslim Brotherhood organizations like the Islamic Society of North America, the Muslim Students Associations. So you see a lot of these organizations at the grassroots level and at the national level. I mean, just a few years ago, you had the leader of Hamas in the United States, leader of the Muslim Brotherhood in the United States, Nihad Awad, say at a Muslim Brotherhood conference, the Muslim American Society Islamic Circle of North America conference, Black Lives Matter is our matter. Their campaign is our campaign. And I don't know that there's a better visual of what the answer to the question you just asked than that.
Wow. Our phone lines are open here today. Our number 800-733-9829. That's 1-800-733-9829. A lot of information, I know. But, John, one thing we're also seeing is an attack by Saudi Arabia as far as collapsing our oil production in this nation.
Yeah, so what we're seeing amid the Chinese coronavirus issue is we're seeing massive tectonic movements in the war. So you have Saudi Arabia trying to bring down, and I would say they're doing a pretty good job, bring down especially the Texas oil industry, which is huge, but also in other places, other states around the United States that are oil producers and that have oil production. And of course, when that phase is complete, our assessment is that the Turkey-Iran conglomerate, they're working together. They're actually working, Turkey, Iran, and Qatar, those three countries, are allied together, that once Saudi Arabia does this portion of their strategy, then you're going to see Turkey and Iran turn on Saudi Arabia, and I would not be surprised if there was a military conflict in the Middle East between those entities, which I would have to say I can't imagine Saudi Arabia would survive that. And the question is, would the United States actually get involved between two nations or multiple nations that are all hostile to us? Because the State Department still considers Saudi Arabia an ally of the United States, which understand the threat, and I professionally consider that to be a not a sane position, because they're absolutely not an ally.
Folks, it's coming from many, many fronts, but all working together here to really bring down our economy, bring down the United States, and very troubling information. But we need to be alert to what's going on. Let's begin with Julie in Pensacola, Florida. You're on the air, Julie.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to point out that our President Trump has good relationships with other leaders of other countries. Wouldn't he know more about whether this pandemic is really that much of a fake, or if it really is a pandemic? Wouldn't he have more information from other leaders in other countries about what's going on in their country and better assess what's happening?
Thank you, Julie.
So that might be a question better suited for the president, but I would just say this. I can't give up the whole candy store here, but we do brief fairly senior people. And I've been working since 2005 with people at the national level, and have briefed over the years people at the top of the food chain. And I would say I think it's the opposite. Is the lower you go in the food chain, the more people actually have the truth. And that is because the way that both the communist movement or counter-state works and the way the Islamic counter-state works is the primary focus of all of their war-fighting efforts is to control the narrative that our leaders get so that the decisions they make actually work in favor of our enemies. And I would just kind of end this thought by saying the guy who ended up, Richard Higgins, becoming the director of strategic planning for the National Security Council under President Trump, said a few years ago on the Sean Hannity show, back then, he said that the Muslim Brotherhood controls the national security decision-making process inside the U.S. government on matters that relate to Islam. And so that's how they're winning the war. Wow. So you would think the higher up you go, the smarter they go, but that's where all of the information warfare and control the narrative is focused, at those senior levels.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back to more of your phone calls with John Guandolo today from UnderstandingTheThreat.com. You're listening to Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. You want to know the end game? Revelation 18 tells us what the end game is. It is a world government based on governments, business, and religion. Governments, business, and religion. Or you could say merchants, kings, nations, and spiritualism. That's what we're doing. That's what we're seeing. The rise of world government, the rise of big international corporations working in concert with the world governments, and a sorcery, occultism, new age, spiritualism, mysticism, whatever you want to call it. And Revelation 18 speaks of this. Whether you were talking the New King James or the New American, they use the word merchants four times, kings twice, nations twice, sorcery once, and all kinds of talk about the people being drunk with the spiritualism of the occultic system of Babylon. You see, it's all coming in to clear view now.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America, another program just jam-packed full of information. Just want to remind you, within just a couple hours from now, the link to this program will be posted at crosstalkamerica.com. You can go back and listen to it. You can share it with others and keep others informed as to what's going on. Or if you'd like a hard copy, a CD copy, we make them available for a donation of just $6. You can call our switchboard at 800-729-9829. Further, to stay informed with John at understandingthethreat.com, John, you've got an email alert list that you keep people informed as issues happen, as you write columns, and they can get signed up for that right on your website as well.
That's right. Go to the homepage and just click the newsletter link there. It's honestly, I think it's the best thing your listeners can do because it connects you to everything that we're doing.
That's understandingthethreat.com. Let's go back to the phone lines to Mark, who is calling next. Mark, you're on the air.
Yeah, my question is, do you think the globalists are succeeding in affecting our mental state of health more than the actual physical threat of COVID-19 so that the U.S. psyche becomes paralyzed? Mm.
Thank you, Mark.
That is a great question. Thank you for asking that question, Mark. I would say that's definitely a part of it, and I think that this outcome of what we're seeing by locking us all down, although a lot of us are, I get out every day, I work out every day, I doing things to stay mentally well and physically well and all that, emotionally well. Yes, I do think that that's a part of this, and you use the word globalist. And I want to make clear, I mentioned it earlier when I said, but I want to be clear, what we're experiencing is a mix of not only the Islamic and the communist movements and the key players and nation states, but it's what I would call the global financial cabal, is that there are people and who may or may not be ideologically aligned with either of these camps, but who, for their own self-interests, are aligning with China in what China is doing to take over the markets and all of that. So I would agree that, yes, part of this is, and China is very well adept at this kind of, it's a kind of warfare.
Let's go to Dan next, calling in from Madison, Wisconsin. You're on the air, Dan.
Thanks, Jim, and thanks, John. Just a comment. John, I followed you for years. You got great information. The challenge is there's so much information to take in. So, Jim, I told the lady when I called in, there's a couple of websites that I go to that I found to be very educational and above board, and they're not tied into the mainstream media.
Okay.
One is...
Tell you what, Dan, I'd like to just refer people to John's at this point, and I don't know what sites you're going to provide here, and because I'm not able to check them out beforehand, I'm just a little bit reluctant there at this point. Do you have a question for John himself?
I'll try to email you. How's that, Jim?
Sounds great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Chuck is next. Go ahead, Chuck. You're on the air. Hello, Chuck.
Hello, John. When you're talking about an immune system, I think we are too clean to start with. I always told my kids, eat more dirt. And my family, we haven't been to the doctor for years and years. And just because you get a sniffle or a cough or sneeze, don't take a drug if you don't have to. So that's my comment.
Okay, thank
I'll
you,
hang
Chip.
Up.
Okay, and John, that's one of the things that some of these medical doctors have been concerned about is that we're not building up a defensive immune system with the shelters in place that are going on all over the country.
Yeah, the only first of all, I think that's a great comment, and I love it.
Eat more dirt.
sounds like some of the advice I gave my children growing up. Just you know, brush it off. You know. The way we grew up was very different than today. But I would say, coming from a medical background, I will also say that one of the things the medical doctor that oversaw us when I was in the FBI was had a career of special forces medicine and done a lot of interesting work. And he told us, because when we would travel, I traveled with an entire kit full of medicines. And I would, as the medic, would actually issue medicine that you'd normally get prescribed for a doctor. And I'll just say this. he used to always say, never give a medicine unless you absolutely think you have to, because of what your caller just said.
Yeah.
So I appreciate it.
Jason is next. Hi, Jason. You're on the air.
Hey, yeah, I was just wondering, I'd like to tell John, and I'm sorry about what's come with the FBI. I know there's still good field officers and good good agents out there and stuff, but overall, I'd also like to say that I do use the hashtag McCarthy is right.
Jason, if I could have you go right to your question, we're down to 2 minutes left.
Would there be a link to the Chicago? Is Chicago, was Chicago considered a hotbed? Has he run across this in his, as far as the communism goes?
Yes, Chicago is a hotbed of both communism and the Islamic movement. Chicago is the hub for Hamas, and Illinois was one of the three states that the Muslim Brotherhood settled in when they first came here in the United States.
Thank you, Jason. Dee is calling from Kentucky. You're on the air, Dee.
Yes, I just wanted to ask Mr. Gwindell if it's just a rumor or if he'd heard anything about Nancy Pelosi being in China in November before all this came to light.
I don't have any factual data on that. I have seen those rumors, but I don't have any factual data on it.
Thank you for the
one
call.
One way or the other.
Yvonne in New Mexico, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm calling to ask if Cuba, when they sent all their prisoners here in the 1980s, if they have anything to do with, like, the sending those people to help break down, like, you know, bring in communism. Because if you ever listen to the national anthem from Cuba, it talks about how they'll do anything, stay in chains and die for their cause.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question. Did the communists send people intermingled with the supposedly people that were locked up for crimes against the communist government? Yes, of course. But I will tell you, some of the most hardened patriots I know are Cubans who left and got away from the Cuban government, and they speak in very clear patriotic terms more than many people that I've ever met.
Thank you for the call here, Yvonne. And theme music is coming up saying our program is done. We have so much more to discuss, but trust folks, you've learned more today about this issue, and check out the information at understandingthethreat.com. You can sign up for their email listing there as well. John, thank you so much for being with us today, for your research, for your dedication here to the nation, and for getting out the truth as to what's going on.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the time, and God bless you and your listeners.
That's John Gwindell. Again, the website, understandingthethreat.com. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.